All right, it's Monday night on the Fan pregame. Sportsnet, 590 The Fan for the next hour. Happy daylight savings. I think people don't like it.
Boy, oh boy. It's a change, eh?
Yeah.
It feels different
in the office. It's dark out there.
Looks different outside.
Yeah. My dog hasn't become accustomed to it. Still wants to eat at the same times. But you're like, it's not that time anymore,
Bunker. It's a battle. It is. It's a battle. It's going to remain a battle. And we're not even near the shortest days of the year. So I guess we got to strap in and get used to it.
Try to brighten your evenings, even though it's pitch blackout. We're going to talk to Vivek Jacob in about 10 minutes. Raptors on the road play the Nuggets tonight. A huge weekend, obviously, in the city. Vince Carter had his big moment on Saturday night. Lots of great content from that. I thought the actual banner itself is stunning. That's just my first analysis on it. Is they nailed it with the banner. And I don't know if you saw when the Celtics won their championship just a few weeks ago. They raised their banner. It was super wrinkly. Ours, pristine.
Pristine banner.
Not a wrinkle in that banner.
Good. A banner shouldn't be wrinkly.
But when you shove it in? When that...
Like it's my closet? You just shove banners in?
Man.
I mean, you have a lot, maybe you're just more
that Celtics
to shove
banner
in.
That went up was a disgrace. It looked like a crumpled up piece of paper when Kipper and Bourne leave this place. But no, looked great. We'll get into a little bit more of that with Vivek. John Morosi is going to join us at 6:30. It's MLB free agency kicking things off for about an hour already. We've got some... nothing huge yet, but some qualifying offers to look through and some, I guess, wish lists for our listeners to send in. We'll open up our text line at 590-590. Let's focus on those Blue Jays. Who should they go after in free agency? Let us know. We can read your message on the air. We'll take a look at those throughout the show because now it's real. The offseason has begun.
No secret that for the Blue Jays over the last couple of years that the best laid plans have not necessarily been achieved, at least for the offseason, and they've had to kind of rely on, you know, maybe plan B, plan C, plan D, maybe even further down the line from that. So I think it is worth discussing what the plan A is, but understanding that the Blue Jays probably have to go into this offseason having a few more contingency plans in place because, not getting what they initially wanted the last couple years has really left them in a tough spot, really left them, honestly, with incomplete lineups. And it's led to a couple years of disappointment here for the Toronto Blue Jays.
Okay, so let's go through a couple of our wish list items, what we want to see starting now. It is time for the Blue Jays and for all the other organizations to kind of get their offseason going. For me, the headline item starts with extending Vladimir Guerrero Jr. I think that whether that has a 1%, 10%, 50% impact on free agents, I think having Vlad a part of your future long-term, locked up, solidified as the face of the Toronto Blue Jays has got to be the most important thing for the Toronto Blue Jays to start with. This season, we saw exactly who Vladdy can be and hopefully will be moving forward. I just think it's the starting point that would make a lot of Blue Jays fans happy. Not that that's all that matters, but for me, it certainly does. Having Vlad extended long-term face of the franchise, I think can help with some of these other names, and we're going to get to Juan Soto and whether that's a real thing or not. But I think even if it's a 5% factor to have Vlad signed as your face of the franchise, then maybe these things come to you easier. So go get Vladdy signed today.
I'm with you. And I think you speak for most of the fan base that just wants to see that dealt with because the messaging at the end of the year honestly was a bit surprising where it didn't seem like they really wanted
like,
to enter.
Is he a franchise player?
Yeah, questioning ability, questioning staying on the field, questioning whether generational is a tag that you could place on him,
if not now,
but in a couple of years. Like that kind of definitely raised some eyebrows for me, and I hope that gets done. And if that gets done and nothing else gets done, at least you can like comfortably look to the future and maybe think, hey, maybe we should keep our powder dry here and try and build this thing again. But because it is a lame duck season for Vlad and Bo, and the situation seems mostly bleak. I mean, Will Wagner, who was thought as a throw-in, penciled in second base. Another year for Gosman, Berríos, and Chris Bassitt, 1 year older. Bullpen short, many arms, probably can't get what would be required to match wits with a Dodgers team, a Yankees team, a Padres team, all those clubs that we saw threaten a world championship or look like they were of that caliber. I just feel like there's so many holes they need to fill. So I think instead of not having a plan B, they should be the plan B. Mm. Last year, we saw a lot of players slip through the cracks, have nowhere to go, be late for spring training, have bad starts to the season. Blake Snell, chief among them, and he's back on the market this year. I think they should just kind of, if not go out and get a prized asset, which I think is pretty far-fetched, just be there when people fall through the cracks and try to add as much talent you can to the lineup through inexpensive means, because they are tiptoeing around it seems. They don't want to dive all the way in. They don't want to embrace Vlad and throw all the money in long-term extensions and long-term contracts, because I think there is a reluctance to do so. So if you just catch all of which all the talent that which you know falls into their grasp.
So you want to be the bridesmaid.
I think they could be a pretty good team if they do that. But I don't think they can just go headhunting a couple big names and expect there not to be holes. I feel like a lot more is required of that. So in the absence of something spectacular, I think just being there to catch the talent that is still available a couple months into the winter might be a decent strategy.
Yeah. I kind of feel like that's like a little bit of a loser mentality though. Like, a non-urgent.
I just think it's the situation that they find themselves
in. But
it's
just a non-urgent mentality. Like, well, we'll be there to catch the, you know, Juan Soto will remove him from the pieces, but like Anthony Santander, like I think he could be a great fit for the Blue Jays. I don't think he's going to slip through the cracks of five or six other teams that look to add somebody and then happens to go for the Blue Jays. Like, I think they should try to get some of these big names. Like, what about a Teoscar Hernandez?
I'd be down for that.
Yeah, so I don't think he's going to fall through the cracks into the Blue Jays in a month or two. I think they need to show more urgency. And maybe they're not going to be the main suitors for a lot of these guys. But I think perspective-wise, if I was watching my franchise, I'm a fan of the Blue Jays, just kind of like pick at the, like be around the margins and chew away at things when they fall to me, I would just feel like, are you taking this seriously? Like, are you taking the importance of Vlad being Vlad and maybe Bo finding some resurgence and maybe this starting rotation, which is aging? Like, this isn't going to be the prime of this Blue Jays team forever. Like, what is your window? And I think if you want to make your window the next couple of years, you got to be like hunting for the big fish. I want to say, like, yes, Juan Soto, we're going to talk about it. And obviously we've seen online that his name's been circled with the Blue Jays. We've done this before. We've fallen in love with the free agent and not seen it work. But can you still be a suitor and not lose out on people in the process? Like, if you allocate the energy and time that we think that the Blue Jays did for Shohei Ohtani, we saw that last year, I think, be a reason they didn't get a lot of other people. They had all this time and energy and money on Shohei Ohtani. And then when he didn't sign, where was the backup plan? So you can't have that be the same way you approach Juan Soto. And whether there's a 5% chance he cares about the Blue Jays, you give it your all, but you have to know that there's got to be people that you have ready as plan B, as you mentioned. So, I mean, Juan Soto, it's crazy. And we just had our text line open at 590-590, and somebody said, like, is it worth getting Juan Soto for $600+ million with his defense? Like, is it going to set the back? I'm like, I think getting Juan Soto would make this Blue Jays team unbelievably better offensively, for sure.
Yeah, they would be better. But again, I just think there's no promise with it. There is no promise as opposed to the Dodgers or another big fish that could go out and get Soto. Yeah, he helps you fix your lineup, which was awful, but he can't plug every hole.
No.
This is Costco shopping for the Blue Jays, honestly. Like, they need to go down one aisle and find a couch and two tubs of mayonnaise, because that's just what they need. They need a variety of things. If they just go shopping for the sports car, yeah, that's going to be like a nice off season, and it's going to be exciting, and it's going to sell jerseys, and it's going to be great. And hopefully, you know, that means Vladdy follows suit, but it just doesn't make them a World Series contender.
Yeah.
If you spend all your money there, I don't know. It doesn't fix the issue for me.
I think the problem is there's too many problems. And right, maybe $600 million that was there for Shohei could be there for Juan Soto, but I don't know if the Blue Jays can afford to just fill one bucket or fill one part of their cart. I like the Costco analogy, but yeah, you're right. They need a lot more than just one thing. So this offseason now kicking off and free agency kicking off will be really interesting to see who they're in on and what priorities they place as number one. And as we mentioned, we're going to have John Morosi of MLB Network on in about 30 minutes to get us through tonight and to where he thinks that the Blue Jays could be focusing the money that they have. But let's shift gears over to Vivek Jacob, Raptors and Seven newsletter and Sportsnet.ca. Big V, how's it going?
It's going great. It's great to see you guys.
Yeah, good to be back with you. It's been a while.
It has. We're here to talk some Raptors, so let's get to it.
We are. So Vince Carter weekend was awesome. I mean, we were watching. We had the Leafs game, so we were kind of streaming it and watching as well. So we didn't get to be there in the presence. But I was really, I guess, moved by the emotion that we saw from Vince. Obviously, a lot goes into this, a lot of energy and time and anticipation. But the biggest thing for me was just how emotional Vince was immediately. When you look at the entire night, where do you want to start in terms of things that resonated with you and Vince Carter's night at Scotiabank Arena?
So I got to the arena at about 4:30 because Vince was doing a presser with the media before all the festivities. And so right from there, you could see the emotion. He had a few words. He didn't say much. You could sense that he was a bit nervous and probably thinking about everything that's to come on the night. And yeah, as the questions came, he got more and more emotional. He had that incredible moment where he called his son over and gave him a big hug. And I think just looking back on the memories, and I think maybe part of why he was so emotional was because of the way things ended, he maybe thought at the time there was a chance that this wouldn't happen. And so... And so to get to this point, for everyone to be able to put all that aside and say, yeah, you know what? All the positives significantly outweigh the negatives, and this is the right thing to do.
Yeah, for me, like in life, the most special moments are the ones that are unpromised, and I think that's kind of what we saw, right? I think, you know, for a while, he probably felt it wasn't going to happen. Then there was maybe the 50-50, and there's a lot of conversations happening, and we got to wait for Kyle and this and that, but... I think that he felt that even when he was walking towards the tunnel and about to emerge, he didn't know maybe what the entire reception would be. And then once it was loud in there and got louder and he made it louder, it became like, oh, this was definitely the right thing. Did you experience it that way?
No question about it. I mean, right from the second Herbie Kuhn said, you know, hey, from North Carolina at 6'6", guard number 15, it brought back all those memories of him coming out to that building and putting on a show. And then the crowd to show him as much love as they did. And for him to be charged up by it to the point where he's letting out these primal roars. And then that gets the crowd going even more. I thought for a second someone was going to throw him a basketball and he was going to go throw down like a 360 or something. Like that's how energetic he was. And that was probably the only thing that was missing on the night, because I thought the way Masai spoke was so special. I mean, there is no hype man like Masai, and no one who brings the passion and heart the way he does. And so that was perfect. And then for Vince to come and speak the way he did, and, you know, kind of touch on the point that, hey, regardless of how you feel, all of that goes up with that number 15, and that the fans are going up just as much as he is, because, you know, you think about the way people talk about the Raptors fan base and how rabid they can be and how passionate they can be. A lot of that started with people seeing Toronto and the Raptors for what they were when Vince was there.
I think one of the best things about his speech was that he gave everyone the opportunity to view that, the moment, as whatever you want to view it as, right? Like, this is, it's history going up. It's not necessarily unanimous in the way we think about it, but this is a major portion of Raptors history. And I think he hit that right note in that moment. When I'm watching it, I'm thinking, okay, this had to happen, clearly. Like, this is something that clearly had to happen. It makes all the sense in the world. I guess the timing is the thing you might want to quibble with. Was it too early? Was it too late? Did it have to happen after Kyle? I honestly, thinking about it when I was watching it, I thought maybe too late. Like, this should have happened before. And I get waiting on Kyle because I do think Kyle is most representative of what should be celebrated with Raptors and Raptors history. I'm left just, I guess, incomplete in that thought and what it should be other than, yes, it had to happen. Any reason to think, hey, they really should have waited for Kyle despite this needing to happen as well?
For me personally, I think it's just as simple as, hey, Vince retired first. We don't know when Kyle's retirement is going to come. We don't know when DeMar DeRozan's retirement is going to come. And I think that's as simple as it is for me. So Vince, you know, retiring in 2020, getting into the Hall of Fame this year, and now the Raptors having their 30th anniversary celebration, I think it ties in perfectly to do it when they did it.
Now that you mentioned DeMar DeRozan, we got to just touch on the interesting relationship between Drake and him. I just wonder, it's interesting. I just, you know, I was a big fan of DeMar, and I think he means a lot to this city, and he means a lot to the Raptors fans. And I, after hearing the way that Drake spoke about him and just the energy around it, I wonder if that's complicated, if any of the relationship externally between how DeMar might feel about Toronto or the Raptors and his potential ability to get his jersey retired, whether Drake wants to claw it down or not. I just thought, of all things on one night, it was just not, maybe not the best time to have that kind of clouding the celebration.
Yeah, it definitely was unnecessary, but I do think that, you know, whatever happened, it's not going to change anything about the way DeMar feels about Toronto, the way he feels about the Raptors franchise. And, you know, even if you've read his book from this year, mm-hmm. the way he speaks about Toronto, it's his second home. And that is what maybe complicates things with Drake, that he is loyal to Compton. But I do feel that when anyone who goes to Basketball Reference and just looks at Toronto Raptors franchise ranks, you will see nothing but DeMar DeRozan all over it. Mm-hmm. And so I have no doubt that one day he will go up there deservedly. And as DeMar said, Drake's going to have a lot of climbing to do to get that down.
That was a great shot back. We're talking to Vivek Jacob, of course, tonight. We've got the Raptors on the road play the Nuggets. I want to look through the Raptors in 7-game sample size. I think one of the most surprising pieces would be Grady Dick's sophomore season. You know, he's even in the discussion some places about the most improved player. Just like, how do you contextualize the steps that he's taken in one season offensively, because that's exactly what we're seeing, is Grady Dick taking like so many steps forward. Defensively, maybe we can touch on that afterwards, of areas he can still improve, but this version of Grady Dick has been unbelievable to watch.
It really is. I think when you look at last season, he was primarily a three-point shooter from the corner specifically. And so a lot of people came into this season saying, hey, can he develop his shooting from above the break, because that's something the Raptors really need. And if he had done that alone, we would have said, hey, he's taken some really positive steps here, and then you move on to his third season and you go from there. But for him to be able to shoot now primarily from above the break, for him to drive to the basket the way he's doing it, and to even take on the shot volume that he's taking on, you look at the absences of Emmanuel Quickley and Scotty Barnes, for him to be able to put up 25 shots a game, that's not easy. That takes a lot of endurance. And so he's obviously put in a lot of work in the offseason. We talked about him bulking up as he came into the season, but now we're seeing his endurance as well. And I think that's a huge, huge improvement.
Is this already way more palatable this year than it's been the last couple of years? I mean, this is definitely a flawed team, but it's been a fun team so far. A encouraging 2-5, despite not having Emmanuel Quickley for most of it. Scotty Barnes for a recent portion here. Like, can we already look at this and be like, okay, we're going to survive this. It's going to be fun. It's going to be, you know, a bit annoying at times, and it's going to be trying at times, but this is going to be a palatable Raptors season.
It's like what the Joker said, right? Nobody panics when it's all part of the plan. And everyone said that this is a rebuild. Mm-hmm. And so no one is expecting this team to come out and win 50 games. And so they want to see development. And that's what we're seeing on a nightly basis. We're seeing Grady Dick take these steps. We're seeing Ochai Agbaji look much improved. We're seeing even RJ Barrett, mm-hmm. who is the same age as Ochai Agbaji, but we don't view him that same way. But he's taken a huge step forward with his playmaking. And so I think to see the development, to see the growth, that is the priority this season. That's something that's been missing from the Raptors' identity. When you think about their best years in the We the North era, as DeMar DeRozan and Kyle Lowry were leading that team, mm-hmm. development was a huge part of it, including the 905 and the way guys like Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet and Norman Powell came through the ranks. And now you hope to see that with this new iteration of the franchise.
I think that's what's been most impressive about RJ Barrett. I mean, he's got three nights in a row with 30 plus points. We know that. But like, I think he's showing more of that leadership veteran presence, even though he isn't, you know, super, super old, and he's still in a growth curve himself. But when you mention, like, you know, the Kawhis or the Kyle Lowry's or the DeMar's, like, maybe RJ has some of that DNA to be a leader, to be somebody that can drive this team, not only as a player, but as a voice. Is that, have you seen that with RJ over the first, you know, his first return to play and how he's been able to lead on and off?
No question about it. I think him and Jakob Poeltl have probably taken the reins in that regard. And I think RJ, the way he's encouraging his teammates, the way he's finding his teammates and showing confidence in them, that's the biggest thing. You could see potentially, you know, an RJ saying, oh, okay, I've really got to carry the load here and I've got to take 35, 40 shots, whatever it takes, and force the issue. But no, he's trusting his teammates. He's empowering them. And that's a huge part of leadership. And so the way he's, you know, kind of stepped aside at times to let Grady Dick come into his own, I think has been beautiful to watch. And I think that's what sort of sets the platform for when Scotty Barnes and Emmanuel quickly are able to come back to really maybe see what that potential could look like.
Last one for you, Vivek. Raptors and Nuggets tonight on Sportsnet. How dire is the situation around Nikola Jokic right now? It seems like the talent around him has eroded since they won a championship, and Jokic is going to have to be even maybe more than a four-time MVP for this team to repeat what it has done previously. Just the supporting cast, how much has it dropped off in the situation Nikola Jokic is in?
Yeah, it's a shame when you think about it, when ownership kind of goes into this mode of thinking, hey, okay, we got the championship. Now we've got to manage the finances, and you lose key pieces like Bruce Brown, who's on the Raptors now. You look at the loss of Kentavious Caldwell-Pope, an elite defender at the NBA level, and obviously a knockdown three-point shooter, to lose him, Jeff Green, a veteran that was lost as well. So I think all those losses have added up. You've got a lot of young guys that you're throwing your faith in, and whether it doesn't look like it'll be this season, so whether that happens next season or the season after, at the end of the day, you know, you only get so many years of a player like Jokic's prime. And so to see potentially one of those seasons wasted like this is a pity. And obviously, Jamal Murray is a big story in this. He just doesn't look healthy, and that's taking away from what could have been another special year for this team.
Yeah, Jamal Murray out tonight against the Raptors in concussion protocol, so we won't see him. But hopefully he recovers up well and can do something for this Nuggets team. But at least they're not the 1-5 Bucks. You know, that it could be worse.
We're without Giannis tonight against Cleveland. Also on Sportsnet.
Yeah, and you love Cleveland.
I do.
All right.
How could you not?
Yeah, they are a fun team. Well, V, we appreciate you jumping on. This was fun. We'll definitely get you on more and enjoy tonight's game.
Thanks so much for having me.
That's Vivek Jacob, Raptors and 7 newsletter and Substack, and Sportsnet.ca, some articles for us there. Raptors and Nuggets, it's a 10 p.m. start. Mm-hmm. Stay tuned. We got our pregame show on Sportsnet 590, The Fan, at 9:30, so a little bit sooner. That daylight savings helping or hurting?
It probably helps in this regard.
Yeah.
At least for now.
It's all darkness at this point. But yeah, I'm excited for the Raptors. They've had a really good stretch of basketball. And tonight, you know, they're playing a 3-3 Nuggets, as you mentioned. There's no Jamal Murray. It's Jokic and Jokic and Jokic. I think they could keep it close. Like, we're going to have our best bets later in the show. But just the way that Grady Dick and RJ Barrett have played, it's becoming fun to watch. And that was one of the rules mm-hmm. about this season, is like, how can the Raptors keep us interesting? Just be fun, be energetic, put up shots, be gritty. And they have a lot of these comebacks. They're pushing games to overtime. And yeah, they're not supposed to win a lot of them, but I don't know. I've enjoyed watching Raptors basketball more than I thought.
Yeah, it's definitely been better than my expectations, and honestly better than previous seasons mm-hmm. when there just wasn't like a concrete plan and there were other things pulling at each other and it just wasn't seamless and working cohesively. This clearly isn't like the cohesive unit that's going to go into Boston and get W's in big spots. But, you know, if it's all about the process, which it is, and if the process puts offense first and, you know, the production of Grady Dick and mm-hmm. RJ Barrett growing offensively, and how these other guys might be able to fit from an offensive standpoint, like, it is at least fun. Mm-hmm. Like, this, we're going to talk about what we like in the game a little bit later. Like, I don't know how you could not expect a repeat of what we saw last time between these two teams where there were a ton of points scored in an overtime loss for the Raptors. The Raptors have been fun, a fun 2-5 team, and that's kind of the perfect elixir if you're thinking ahead, but also understanding that their meaningful progress has to be made this year in order to not waste more time.
Speaking of wasting time, the Blue Jays have a really important series of time here with some of their most talented young stars, Vladimir Guerrero Jr. being one of them. We asked you at the start of the show on our text line at 590-590. It'll be open, standard message and data rates apply. For the rest of the show, who should the Jays go after in MLB free agency? We're going to take a quick break. We'll talk to John Morosi. We'll go through his thoughts around the league, but we'll definitely leave some time to read your texts on air. We've already got a couple in there. A lot of people excited about the potential of maybe a superstar that just played for the Yankees, but we'll see how realistic a Juan Soto to the Blue Jays is. We don't want to get hurt again, but, you know, maybe there's something there.
You're opening yourself up to it.
I'm just, my heart is has a little bit of space. We'll just let it, see what happened. Okay. But anyway, we'll go through that and more. We'll take a quick break. We'll be back with John Morosi.
Big guests and bigger opinions on everything happening in Leafsland. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back on the Fan pregame. Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, the Fan. A little later on, you can catch Raptors and Nuggets as a 10 p.m. start across Sportsnet. But your appetizer will be Bucks and Cavs, 7 o'clock on Sportsnet. And if you're looking to listen to the Raptors Nuggets, we've also got it on Sportsnet 590, the Fan, with a 9:30 pregame show.
Yeah, Giannis Antetokounmpo is threatening to make this a very, very interesting NBA season from a transactional standpoint. Seems like things are going pretty poorly there in Milwaukee. With Giannis, it'd be tough to be Dame Leonard. You get Lillard, you get traded there, and this seems to be eroding right in front of our eyes. So we'll see what happens with Giannis, but we won't see what happens with Giannis tonight as he's not going to play against Cleveland.
We do like transactions, and we like free agency.
That'd be fun. That'd be a fun story to track.
We like both of those, and we like John Morosi, who joins us now of MLB Network to help us go through the start of free agency. John, how's it going?
Doing well. Good evening from San Antonio. Day one of the GM meetings. And speaking of the NBA, I'm just a little bit sad. The Spurs are out of town this week. I wanted to find a way to make it a two-sport trip. So I just have to make sure I get back to Michigan by the time the Leafs and Wings match up on Friday.
How often are you trying to hunt down tickets to other sporting venues while you're on the road? You spend a lot of time on the road. Do you have like a partner in crime, someone who likes going to games with you? How often are you trying to get into other arenas?
That is actually a great question. I will at times be able to do adventures when I'm traveling for a certain sport to maybe go watch another one, because as you both can probably imagine, when I'm home, we've got the Morosi trio, our girls going around their various activities. It leaves very little time for me to go to a different sporting event. So actually, I was in Atlanta earlier in the playoffs, and I was able to go to a football game, Notre Dame, Georgia Tech. So every now and then I'm able to sneak in that one little extra assignment, but very rarely when I'm in Ann Arbor. I'm the minivan driving field hockey and swimming dad, which I'm very proud to do all winter long.
I just looked it up. There's a pickleball tournament at Morgan Sports, 5025 Dave Edwards Drive. And so right down the road from where you are.
That is excellent information.
Send him a location.
It's amazing. I'm firmly now going down the rabbit hole, but I have heard that pickleball on TV has become a thing. Oh. So maybe it's time for me to learn a little bit about the pickleball, the kitchen, all the yes. different rules to be able to effectively broadcast those
What's
games.
The kitchen?
Oh, you
know the kitchen?
You haven't played pickleball?
I want to. I do want to. I don't know the rules.
Have you played, John?
What's the kitchen, though? Just tell me.
A little bit. I've played like a couple times.
The kitchen is like, it's kind of like the key, like in basketball, right up by the net. Okay. And you can't step into the kitchen unless you, like there's a serve to you. Anyway, the kitchen is important. I would love to teach anyone pickleball. I love pickleball. It was like a summertime sport that it's taken over. My friends play in a league in Toronto.
I don't know how you're not in that league.
Yeah, I'm busy working. Anyway, John, let's talk about Juan Soto because, you know, he could make a lot of money. And obviously just saw that the Yankees sent him the qualifying offer. But let's just talk about the competition around Juan Soto. Like, how tough is the Yankees competition to keep him moving forward? Is it just coming down to price tag, or is there something that Juan Soto wants? Like, what does he want?
Yeah, Ailish, it's really important questions for, I think, for the whole industry, because we're just now starting to figure out and put this puzzle together about what the Juan Soto free agency could look like. I think first and foremost, he's someone who won a World Series title as a very young player in Washington 5 years ago. He was on the World Series stage just last week with the Yankees. I don't think he's going to be signing with a rebuilding team. This looks to me like someone who's going to go major market team with a chance to win during what could be a 10, 12 year contract. This is a mega deal. He may, it's certainly when you look at the net present value of the contract, he may go beyond what Shohei's deal was. Now there's different ways of figuring Shohei's deal because of the deferments and those types of payments, but this could be a deal that's in the range of $45 million a year, more than that. I think certainly a $50 million a year AAV is not out of the question because of just what a young, proven superstar player he is. And I said this earlier today on MLB Network. I think in a lot of ways, this is a New York question about the two favorites. It's probably going to be Yankees or Mets, and is there a bidding war? It was interesting. And actually, Joel Sherman, my colleague at MLB Network, made this point in a segment we did earlier today, that the Yankees and how they handled Gerrit Cole today, drawing a line, might have been a very interesting bit of an early strategy with Scott Boras, who of course also represents Juan Soto. He represents Gerrit Cole as well. And that maybe the way that the Yankees played this was saying, listen, there is a line that we are not going to go beyond. And so if Juan Soto is looking for the very last dollar, the very last dollar might be found in Flushing, Queens, because of Steve Cohen and how aggressively they're likely to pursue him this winter.
We've heard that the two New York teams do, I don't know if there's an omerta, but they do not compete for free agents. Is there any news on that in terms of the interest the Mets will have? Because, yeah, I guess they could draw a line with Gerrit Cole and they could show and demonstrate that with Juan Soto. But if there is no competition, and you said $50 million is like the baseline potentially to get in, you outlined the two New York teams. Will there be two New York teams chasing him at the same time? Because that would be somewhat unprecedented.
It is unprecedented that it would be a Mets versus Yankees bidding war, because it rarely happens. Although I would point out that a year ago, and it wasn't an original Yankee or original Met, but they were both in there on Yamamoto until the very last moment. Of course, he ended up going to the Dodgers. So you're right in that when Judge was a free agent, we didn't really hear a lot about the Mets being involved, and I think it would have been a big surprise. I think what's unique about Soto is probably two things. Number one, that he's not just a great player who is going to be great for the next 4 to 5 years. This could be a decade-long or more transformative contract for your team. Think about how long Bryce Harper's deal was in Philly, how long Machado's deal is in San Diego. It's that type of a longer-term idea. The other piece of this, where Soto is distinct from Judge, is in addition to the fact that he's younger, he also was not a career-long Yankee. He was there for 1 year. Mm-hmm. And I think he has played more games for the Nationals and even played more games for the Padres than he played for the Yankees. So it's not as though he was a career-long Yankee. And I think especially Steve Cohen, he's looking to make his mark. He got his team to the NLCS. They were just two games behind the Dodgers in that series. He's looking for a superstar. And so I think the long-standing omerta, to the extent that there was one, I think is long gone when you're talking about Juan Soto.
Last one for me on Juan Soto. A team that fits that criteria with enough money, with not a rebuilding franchise, that could be maybe a sneaky team to swoop in and get their name in the, I guess, the running for the Juan Soto sweepstakes.
Well, I think a couple teams that come to mind. The Philadelphia Phillies, they're lurking. I think that we've seen before Dave Dombrowski is not bashful about going after big-time free agents. He's done it before in Detroit. He's got some contracts coming off the books in the next couple years there in Philly, so I'd put them as a team that could be in the mix. With the West Coast, I think the Giants, the first year under Buster Posey, they may make a play. The Blue Jays may make a play, but I really think that we are well over 50% likelihood that he is playing in New York for one of those two teams. And it's going to take, I think, a real surprise an owner that's going to go well above and beyond to make this anything but a New York address for Juan Soto for the next decade. Again, we could be surprised. Surprises happen in the offseason. Mm-hmm. But I think that the overwhelming likelihood is that Soto is a Yankee or a Met by spring training.
I'm sure the Padres won't be involved in the Juan Soto sweepstakes given, you know, the history there. But there's an argument for the Padres being, you know, the second best team in baseball behind the Dodgers, given that they definitely pushed the Dodgers. They were more competitive than the Yankees were. And you look at that roster, it's very, very impressive. How do they respond? How do they try to match wits? How do they try to get better so that it's a different result this time if they meet the Dodgers in the playoffs next year?
They're a really fun team to talk about, Justin, because of everything that you mentioned, that you could look back at October and say they might have been the second best team in baseball. It just so happened they ran up against the Dodgers early on and didn't make it out of that series. I look at the Padres and say the one variable that we've got right now is, will they spend big for a major guy, let's say a Corbin Burns or one of the other top starting pitchers, or make a run at another big-time bat, even though their lineup is pretty complete right now, I would say. Will they make that kind of investment in this new era since the passing of their beloved owner, Peter Seither? We don't quite know if they're going to go to that extent in this new ownership control and the way the budget is working right now for the Padres. Peter Seither was one of the more, I just think he's one of the more beloved people in the sport because he went and spent beyond what the market said it should for that payroll. It's why they've got this constellation of stars and why they got Juan Soto in the first place. I'm just not convinced they're going to go and make a big time play for a Corbin Burns type, or certainly someone like a Soto, that example. And their infield right now, Justin's pretty well stacked. I think probably one of their biggest obligations could be to rebuild their bullpen. Tanner Scott is a free agent right now. Of course, he had a tremendous second half with them, part of that dominant bullpen. Bringing him back might well be one of their more important moves they could make. Jerickson Profar, similar category with him, now a free agent after a really strong year in San Diego.
We're chatting with John Morosi of MLB Network. It is MLB free agency. Okay, so let's talk about extending Vladimir Guerrero Jr. For me, I think that that's maybe the number one thing on the Blue Jays to-do list if they were starting to write it down. How much does that actually influence maybe who would want to come to play for the Blue Jays if they're a free agent? They see that the Blue Jays did their business. They extend Vlad. They make him a Blue Jay for life. How much do you think that helps maybe land somebody that's deciding between a couple franchises?
That's an excellent point, Ailish, and I really think that a lot of people in the industry, players, as you point out, are watching carefully to see what happens here. Vlad's agent, Barry Praver, is here. I saw him earlier today. Didn't quite glean exactly where the negotiations stand, but he is in the building. I can confirm that. I do think there's a pretty good school of thought that unfortunately for the Jays, that they may have to wait until Soto signs before Vlad's camp is really willing to engage on this. That would make logical sense if I was representing Vlad to say, wait a minute, let's let Juan Soto set a record maybe and go beyond Judge, go beyond Shohei potentially, and then I'll sort of play off of him in terms of what I'm asking for as an extension. So I think if that's the case, it might not line up well for the Jays to be able to pivot quickly and then say, here's the extension. Look, everybody, now want to come and play in Toronto, when it might all be happening at the same time. So that to me is the tricky part. The other piece of this is, what do they do with Bo Bichette? And I think there are teams out there, the Giants are one, the Dodgers are another, that might be in the free agent market for a shortstop. And they may also look at Bo and say, if I'm not going to spend this for Willy Adames or Ha-Seong Kim, what could I do to potentially trade for Bo? And how would that be interpreted across the industry and for players if they see Bo moving on from Toronto? So, and again, we're a ways away from that point, but I think it's one of the many options in front of the Jays in the industry here in the coming days. So I agree with you, Ailish, on the importance of signing Vlad for the long-term vision for the Blue Jays. I'm just not convinced that they've got a great chance to do that in the coming weeks. I think they have to wait for Juan Soto to sign, and the news about what that final ticket might be, the price there, might not necessarily bode well for the Jays being able to afford Vladdy this close now to him becoming a free agent 1 year from now.
Yeah, it seems like it's going to be difficult for the Blue Jays to be proactive here, so we'll see what position that puts them in. John, what do you expect the market to look like for a fan favorite around these parts, Teoscar Hernandez?
Yeah, I think in Teo's case, he gets the qualifying offer. I think he'll do better than that on the open market. He seems to me, and while defensive questions have been part of his story, I thought he made a great throw at Yankee Stadium. I think he's addressed a lot of that. I would think that the Dodgers are going to make a real effort to keep him because they saw how important he was for their clubhouse and for them on the field as well. The run production, he was just a perfect guy to have after their big three. And I think for that reason, the Dodgers will make a strong effort to bring him back. And, of course, with the qualifying offer, one of the subtle advantages of the qualifying offer when you give it to a player is that you're the one team that can – sign him without having to give up something on the back end. So I think that ends up being, a very favorable thing for the Dodgers. I could also see the Giants making a play for Teoscar. Maybe even a team like the Padres. We talked about them. Mm-hmm. While they can't play for Soto, maybe they could bring in an outfit if they're not going to bring back Jerks and Profar. I think Teoscar could get at least $25 million a year over 3 years. Does someone go to a fourth year? I think that's probably the question. But when you look at the number of teams that need big-time bats, whether it's Detroit, who makes it back to the playoffs but clearly needs one more big-time bat, I think Teoscar's going to find a really healthy market to where $25 million a year looks pretty makeable, and maybe there's a team out that would go to 4 years to get him. Compare him maybe to Anthony Santander in some different ways. I think Teoscar's overall profile might be in some ways even a little more appealing than what Santander has done there with the Baltimore Orioles.
I was looking through the list of top free agents, and I feel like this is maybe the first time in a while that I felt like it's a very healthy pitching market. A lot of pitchers in the top 20, big names with a lot of upside. Is this maybe like the time to swing for a pitcher that might have had Tommy John or is coming off a down season? There's a lot of like really big names, and I wonder how healthy you think the market is for those looking for a pitcher.
Yeah, it's a very interesting strategy, Ailish, because we saw last winter, I would say this, that the Kansas City Royals, when they brought in Lugo and Waka, did about as well as any team did in free agency in terms of at least maybe in the non-Shohei category. I think that was a tremendously effective offseason for the Royals. They were able to bring back Waka as well just in the last couple of days. So they're really set up nicely. And so I think that to your point, the cause for a lot of teams this winter is going to be, hey, let's rather than spending on maybe the next Yamamoto, which was more than $300 million before he even threw a major league pitch, which still baffles me. Of course, he pitched well in the World Series, but that was a lot of money. And I think that focus maybe less on him, on those types, and more on let's find the next Lugo or Waka or Jack Flaherty. And Jack Flaherty, by the way, is a free agent right now. Walker Buehler, did he find something down the stretch? He could be a very smart investment. Shane Bieber coming back from surgery. I think, Ailish, exactly the name I was thinking of as you were asking the question was Shane Bieber. What kind of deal would he be looking for? Like 1 year and then he goes back on the market in a year? Those types of deals end up looking very smart, especially when you compare them to what is Max Fried going to get? What is Corbin Burns going to get? So I think a lot of teams right now are doing their homework and their due diligence on starting pitchers. And one name that I think surprised a lot of people in this building when the qualifying offer news came down was Nick Pivetta, Canada's own Nick Pivetta, getting the qualifying offer, which says to me that a lot of the metrics and the analytics that the teams look for, that they really like him. They believe his metrics like Stuff Plus and other underlying numbers are really favorable. So a big day for Pivetta and his family from BC, of course, and he may end up getting that 1 year deal from Boston and actually accepting it, because it's a pretty big number for someone who has not really had a full year of starting from April through September too often on his overall career trajectory.
Do you expect the Blue Jays to be in the starting pitching market?
I do, maybe for one. And I think that when you look at where they're at right now, they've done really well with what they've been able to do internally. I think their focus ends up having to be bats, and maybe you hope that Yariel comes in and is able to have a solid full season after just difficult, I think, to expect Rodriguez to have a full year as a starter just based on how little he had pitched. So I think that he ends up becoming a really nice name for them as maybe he's their fourth or fifth guy. I would say getting one starting pitcher that's maybe in that swingman type role. Again, Pivetta is going to be expensive, but I think that type of an arm, maybe Bieber is actually a good case. Maybe there's that familiarity there with Bieber's early years in Cleveland. Maybe he becomes a nice fit as someone that can come back and add to the Jays pitching mix at some point during the season, even if it's not April.
You mentioned the Yamamoto price. Are we closing in on a price for my guy, Roki Sasaki? Is he coming over, John?
Ooh.
That's a great question, and you're well into my topics for tomorrow morning's hot stove. So, but I'll give you the sneak preview here. I've been talking a lot to international sources here in the last couple of days, based on the tenor of the conversations between the Chibolote Marines, Sasaki's team, and Sasaki's camp itself. I don't get the sense that we're close on a post for him, because remember, the Marines stand to gain a lot if they wait for him to accrue the necessary years to become an international free agent. Right now, he's still classified as an international amateur, which is what Otani was when he first came over. They're not going to be able to recoup much money, because let's say that Sasaki signs for $3 or $4 million here. It's a very small percentage for the Marines. So they have a heavily vested interest in letting this thing play out and letting Sasaki pitch another year or two in NPB before coming over. So right now, Justin, unfortunately, I will say to you, it's less than 50-50 that he ends up making that play. But just for you as a friend, I'm planning on going over to Taiwan and Japan later on this month to cover the Premier 12, and I will send back my dispatches at like 6 a.m. when I'm in Japan.
Okay.
But I love the people so much, I'll get up early to be able to talk with you guys when I'm in Japan.
Love it.
Very sweet,
okay,
John.
We appreciate that.
You're the best. And it didn't go unnoticed that you grabbed a poppy for our interview, so thanks for doing that.
Oh, can I? And believe me, I had a moment of panic when I got here, and I said, I am without a poppy. Our man, friend of all of us, mm-hmm. Shai Davidi. I said, Shai, I forgot. He said, JP, I got you. That's why he's a great friend and colleague to all of us. So I had to make sure I'm wearing the poppy here today. Thank you for noticing.
Shai, he's a hell of a teammate.
Yeah, we do appreciate it. Well, John, enjoy the rest of the week, and we're looking forward to seeing what breaks, and we'll definitely chat with you soon. Thanks so much.
Catch up soon. All the best. Thank you.
That's John Morosi of MLB Network. I'm just thinking, if the Blue Jays get Bieber, that jersey's flying off the shelves, eh? Bieber, Jays jersey.
Yeah, I can see it.
No, I think there's what we mentioned. There's a lot of quality arms on the market. I don't know if the Blue Jays need to dip in too much, but their starting rotation is getting a little older. You know, we saw that with some of the guys mentioning that they're getting run deep into the.
Yeah, I think they could definitely use an arm. And that's what I'm talking about. Like, there's got to be some guys who fall through the cracks here. Mm-hmm. Just a veteran arm, low
Let's
stakes,
get the Canadian
low
Nick
risk.
Pavetta.
Like, even if you go back to Yusei Kikuchi, like, you need Kikuchi. Someone to soak up.
I think the Jays should just go back and get all their exes. They should get Teo, they should get Danny Jansen, and they should get Yusei Kikuchi.
Yeah.
Run it back, baby.
Things would look a lot better if nothing had changed, I suppose.
It would. Okay, quickly, before we say goodnight for the evening, let's do some best bets for tonight's game. I think we're both going for the Raptors-Nuggets game, which is a 10 p.m. start on Sportsnet, and also on Sportsnet 590, the fan pregame show at 9:30. I really like the Raptors to cover, and I really like the Raptors to get at least 20 points from Barrett. He's been red hot. We talked about it with Vivek earlier in the show. He's just been kind of like part of the heartbeat. Obviously, Grady Dick is as well, but Barrett's got 31 points or more in three consecutive games. But he did play Denver just a week ago and only got 20. So I'm setting it low, 20-plus points, Raptors to cover 10.5 at plus 150. I think you're similarly aligned.
The alt low for Barrett, the shortest rung on the ladder. You can breast the ladder up, though.
You can
go up to 25.
All you want.
30 if you need be. Yeah, 125 points for the Raptors in the last four games. Mm-hmm. I believe it's going to be really, really difficult to stop Nikola Jokic. These two teams played, I think, combined for 250 points a couple days ago in an overtime loss for the Raptors. I think there's going to be a lot of points in this game. That's the way the Raptors are playing. That's the way Denver has to play right now, given that they're kind of searching for it at the moment. So I think these two are correlated. Raptors are going to have to score to keep it close. Mm-hmm. So I'll pair the Raptors plus 10.5 with the over 231.5. Nice. That's plus 264.
Raptors have covered the spread in six straight games, and the overs hit in four straight games and six of seven.
I mean, that right there is the perfect elixir to a palatable bad season.
Yeah.
Cover spreads
and hit the
score
overs.
Score a lot of points.
We love it.
We're all in. We're enjoying it.
We love it. We said we'd take your texts, and we did, and we didn't get to them, but a lot of...
Let's go. We got time for
okay,
a couple
quickly.
Quick ones.
Jamie Moncton, my wish list, Santander or Neil, Bregman to play third base, bullpen help, Garcia, Hoffman, and a starter, Bueller or Kikuchi, even Bauer for league minimum, DFA or trade Springer.
I'm intrigued by Walker Bueller.
Yep, he looked pretty good there finishing the World Series. The Jays could definitely use a second baseman. We could use a left fielder. Keep Ernie Clement at third. This team needs some thumpers. This is fun. Cheers, Todd. Wow, lots here. Steve, I suggest they lock up Vladdy before they even think of Soto. My opinion is somehow they'll sign Soto first. Vlad will want a lot more money. We got a lot of texts, and we keep just going.
A couple thumpers in the middle of the order if they opening. Cost about $1 billion between them. But
couple
yeah,
bill.
Couple thumpers.
That's it. All right, we're going to send you over to Bucks and Cavs on TV, and then a little later on, Raps and Nuggets. Have a great night, everyone.